P.S. Inverted, you suck. Now, just making sure he edits it out.
We don't need no masthead. We don't need no rules. Cause we just talk and bounce boys like a bunch of crazy ass fools.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you again. This is Mashhead Free Podcast. I am your host, Tottenham Makes Me Cry. And again this week, I'm going to let our guests introduce themselves, starting this time, ladies first.
Hey guys, it's Brix. Thanks for listening again, if you did.
Thanks, Brix. And now we're going to go age before beauty. So whichever one of you two is oldest.
Oh, I'm definitely older. So, hey, it's 55th Vin. Like I said last week, follow me at 55th Vin if you want to read some ridiculous stuff. But I realize I say more ridiculous stuff than I tweet. So anyway.
And now we're going to go all the way from London, England, or Oxford. Oxford, right?
Yeah. So, hi, my name's A01 Chitra, or A1, just A1. And you can follow me, I'm going to try this, you can follow me at the @ and then in characters, A01CHTRA, that is A01 Chitra. And thank you very much for listening, bearing with us in our early stages.
All right. And I am Tottenham Makes Me Cry again. You could follow me on Carlos Free Captain. I'll be the ridiculous one talking about everything except Spurs. So, guys, we had two matches this past week. One at home, one away. And we're going to start this discussion off with the Europa League, where we won 3-1 against the Dnipro, who was coached by our former manager, Juan de Ramos. There was quite a controversy in the match and all that, but who cares? Tottenham won 3-1 and advanced to the next round, to the 16, to play Benfica. Brix, what were your impressions, your talking points, your memes, your narratives that you got from this week?
Regarding the Ukraine match, it was scrappy. I love a come-behind win. Those are the best. We were down by one goal, weren't we, at one point? So, yeah, knowing that we needed to win 3-1 with the awesome away goal rule that exists in Europa, it was really fun to watch. Regarding the most controversial moment for Tongan, yeah, what a little bitch. I do not see him as a future club captain. But, you know, I can't say I wouldn't do the same thing in the heat of the moment, but I hope our future club captain would not.
Okay. A1, what's the feelings about the match down in London town in England?
In Oxford, the feelings are... I really disagree with Brix. I was going to talk about something different, but actually... I feel like Vertonghen has taken quite a lot of criticism from his own fans at this point, including Brix, obviously as the most vocal of all of the Tottenham fans. And I feel that it was actually quite undeserved because, firstly, obviously, the Suarez defence, that he is a world-class player, so he can afford to be anything up to the level of world-class jackass, and the playerness still just tips that out.
I think we lost A1.
Yeah, I think
A1, are you there?
We know.
If we did lose him, it's because he's incorrect.
Yes. I'm going to have to agree with you, Brix. I think he is incorrect. A1.
Hi. Am I back?
Hi.
You're back.
When did I disappear?
You were going on about Vertonghen should be captain for life.
Yeah. Okay. So basically, my point is that I think that we don't know for sure that he did embellish, because I don't know what it looks like when somebody is headbutted in slow motion, and he definitely was headbutted. And then secondly, I think that it's because it was the single event that turned the match, a lot is being made of it, where in fact there were a huge number of incidents earlier in the game. I think that especially the... I think he was Brazilian, and apparently he scored against Arsenal, and I can't remember his name, but he wore the number 99. I'm sure somebody can be maybe quietly looking that up and supply that information in a moment. But basically that guy dived at least three times, and diving is a bookable offence, and he didn't get booked, so he could have been off long before then. So I don't think the incident itself should have been the thing that turned the game. They were due a red card at some point. That's what I would say.
Okay. 55th, anything to add to this?
Well, I would like to say that just because we don't like that he embellished getting headbutted doesn't change the fact that he was headbutted. And this is what players do when they're headbutted. They make sure that the ref knows they were headbutted. You know, like that hooligan that everybody talks about, Joey Barton, a couple years ago. I think Gervinho put a hand to his face and Joey Barton fell down, like, you know, basically like a ton of bricks hit him, because that's what you do. Also, I'd like to say that not every footballing culture is English footballing culture. Not every culture is American sporting culture. These things are accepted in other places. And if you want a team full of internationals, you have to accept that. Sometimes there's different ways of looking at how to play sport. So I just don't accept that whole, oh, he made a mockery of the game. You know, this is the way some people play. I'd also like to say that, regarding something that was said last week, I really feel, that Eriksen and Adebayor, came to the fore here and they said, you know what? We're down two goals in the European tie, but we're not going to go down, without a fight. And they showed their class. And especially, Adebayor just showed a kind of calm, in that kind of moment that I was really, really, really happy to see.
Okay. I think I'm going to just jump in real quick. First off, congratulations, I think, to you guys. One of you guys said that we were going to advance to play Benfica, and you're right, so you get a drink for the week on my tab if you come to DC. Second, I'm going to say something here. I just want to make sure it's perfectly clear before I say it. I'm speaking for myself and my interpretations of the rules and laws of the game as a grade 7 referee, and from my past experience, what Frutanga did may be wrong, maybe embellishing, maybe not becoming of the game, and could have been a bookable offense for diving. However, in a situation like that, as a referee, you can't call that foul unless the player lets you know that he was fouled. There's been many, it's just like when a player falls down when he's getting his shirt pulled in the corner kick or any other set pieces. If he doesn't tell the referee that, hey, I'm being held back, I'm being fouled, the referee's not going to make the call. So, for all the people who, in my opinion, are hammering on Vertonghen, why isn't the player who was diving throughout the entire match? I didn't watch the match. I listened to it on the radio, and the British commentator was saying all the time how the Ukrainian team's players, on every time they were touched, were falling down. They were basically Stoke City up the game, or they were doing a cross between Stoke City and Barcelona. Anytime you get touched, when you have the ball, you fall down. Anytime you get tackled, fall down. Make the referee make a call. It is what it is. But we won the game through Adebayor's brilliance, and I have to say, I'm going to eat some humble pie and put some ketchup on this crow, and Tim Sherwood is slowly showing me that he knows what he's doing.
Oh, interesting.
Just wanted to say as well, I remember the name of that player. It's Mateus.
Mateus.
Yeah.
We know things.
Okay. Question for you, question for anybody. Other than the Vertonghen incident, which Wenger did not see, was there any other takeaways from the Dnipro match? Anybody can jump in anytime.
We're moving on. That's all that's as much as I care about with that tie.
Yeah. I blocked out a lot of that game.
Well, I have one thing I want to add. And I don't know if you're aware of it, but there's another podcast. I think they're called the Fighting Cock podcast. Check them out after you listen to us. I think they were actually at the game, and they had this like movement or a group called the 1882 movement, where they would sing all through the game. And I have to say, I heard them even through the radio app that I was listening to the game on. I heard them. The crowd was singing. It actually sounded like a quality European night at the lane. And I have to commend all those people who were at the game. Your voices were heard loud and clear over here in America, at least, where
absolutely.
I was listening to the game at.
I do remember that about the game. It's always wonderful to hear.
Yeah. Okay. Well done, 1882.
All right. Well, there was another game. This game happened the other day. Cardiff City won. We won that 1-0. Not the greatest match in the world, but A1, is there anything you want to say about this match?
Yep, so I thought in general it was kind of a pretty painful match to watch, but I had a couple of points. Firstly, I thought that I was very pleased with Lennon's contribution in both halves, especially with his work rate, because I think he's had a lot of criticism as well recently, particularly around his kind of end product. But it's very much underrated to have a player who chases so hard, and he seemed to me to be very much like Robbie Keane used to, in that he was hassling the opposition, kind of stopping them getting their game together. And we were never really troubled by Cardiff, and I thought that was important because there wasn't too much else to cheer other than Lennon kind of really going at the opposition. But my kind of main point is going to be about the fullbacks, because I thought that for the two fullbacks for us, Norton on the right and Friars on the left, there were some kind of major talking points. I thought that Norton has quietly impressed at right back in the last few games, and that he did again against Cardiff. He had a couple of really sexy passes. He was solid in terms of the tackles that he made, even if maybe his positioning was sometimes a little bit off. On the flip side, I didn't think that he really offered very much on the overlap outside of Lennon, which was a little bit disappointing. But to be fair, it seems really that he's just a different type of right-back to Walker, and that's probably useful. And then Friars on the left, I thought he was terrible. He does look to me to be quite ungainly, a little bit awkward on the ball. I never feel that comfortable with him either running forward or tracking back. His passing was very slack, and I'm not sure that was necessarily down to his skill. I thought maybe he was just a bit lazy, and he was caught out high up the field a number of times, and I think that anyone scouting our matches would have picked him out as a weakness. So I feel like we paid £2 million for him. Sir Angry Ferguson was very annoyed. I'd happily undo that deal. Anyway, that was the end of my rant, really.
It's no problem.
What I would say to that is that I really liked what Naughton did the other day. I did notice that, too, that he wasn't necessarily overlapping in that same manner that we see Kyle Walker do. But I think you're also right. You don't always need that. I think Zeki Fires was nervous in that. I mean, Zeki Fires is never going to be some kind of top-class left-back. But, you know, he looked a little nervous. His passing was really, really forced, I think. And, yeah, I agree with you. That's going to get picked apart against the better teams. Because of that, what I would say is that we have to be aware of that and kind of basically set up tactically to do what he does best. I would also like to say that we haven't mentioned yet that Soldado scored. I mean,
who?
Soldado scored. Ooh. And I want to just say, and I'm going to end with that, because I'm going to talk about some of that fullback stuff a little bit later in the Chelsea preview. But, guys, I haven't almost teared up in a while watching Spurs. Or at least I can't remember to have, like, pushed it out of my head. I almost cried when Soldado scored. So, okay. Let's just put that out there. And the reaction from the fans was great. So, I just want to say that.
Brits?
Yeah, I couldn't really get past Soldado scoring. I was just kind of on cloud nine after that. I was so happy to see it. And again, close to tears. Same with 55th on that. For the rest of the game, I did kind of glaze over, but I did notice around that time and really for the rest of the game that Michael Dawson was outstanding. And of course, I'm a little biased, him being one of my favorite players. He was in the right place, the right time. I know that, we've mentioned both Friars and Naughton is getting a lot better. They're not our strongest, on the left and the right. And Dawson really controlled that. I think a lot of people may have been nervous going into that, seeing Dawson, seeing Friars and Naughton, thinking that that's where we're going to blow it. And he just probably had his best game of the season. It was lovely.
Well, since nobody else is going to mention it, I'm going to mention it. I really appreciated on Soldado's goal the Townsend-Modric assist. If it wasn't for Townsend, I don't think that goal would have happened. So we have to give it up to the kid. He might not be a future England captain like Jake Livermore, but the kid's got a bright future, and I will be more than okay handing the left side of field to him. So Townsend, A1 performance this past game. Yes.
Yeah. I have to agree on Townsend. I thought he looked outstanding, really. I mean, not to the point where any of the rest of our team looked cohesive or impressive, which is really the mark of a good performance. But he got his head up, he was effective, his passing was good, he drove forward with the ball, and he looked, in general, like he was just starting, and to be fair, I think he's done this in his last few appearances, really just starting to look like he's making that next step to becoming an established Premier League winger.
I almost want to see Townsend play a little bit more left central. And when I say left central, I don't want him like hugging the chalk, the touch line on the left side. But I want him to play a little bit more in and have Eriksen actually play as our second striker instead of Soldado for some games. But that's just me.
That's a reasonable shout.
What I like to say is that we really focused on playing on the wings in this match for the first time in quite some time. And that's something that I think is interesting if we're going to be going with two strikers. I think that might be the way to go. Of course, it's just speculation, but I was happy to see our wingers have an actual effect on the game, some impact on the game. Of course, we were playing Cardiff, who are terrible, but it was good for confidence, I think.
Coming back, I think our wingers had a strong effect on the game, but who was our biggest goal threat? Michael Dawson. It was great. I mean, because he had such a great game and his goal threat didn't take away from his defending, but it did.
A euphemism?
No.
Goal threat.
I'm gonna have to slightly disagree.
Okay.
And not to say Michael Dawson didn't have a good game, but I think Michael Dawson had a normal Michael Dawson game. It's just we played against a team that was so bad and didn't have the type of threats that make Michael Dawson and Yong Vertonghen look bad that they actually looked good. So I think it comes down more to our opponents made Michael Dawson and Yong Vertonghen look good as opposed to them actually being good this game.
Yeah, if I may, I'd just like to kind of tie everything together because I think the fact that we were playing two wingers and two strikers put a lot of pressure on our central midfielders who both looked a little bit out of their depth because I think of how much work they were having to do. I think that in turn often makes it very difficult for the central defenders. And in that context, I have to agree that Michael Dawson was an extremely important player in that performance.
Does anybody else have anything pressing to add to this Cardiff City discussion?
I pretty much agree with what A1 said right there, and that the midfielders had a lot to do, so therefore central defenders were very crucial. Bricks picked up on that one. Good job, Bricks.
Ah, well done.
I'm an expert.
Well done. All right. What do we have next? Where are we at in the bigger picture, larger scheme of things?
We're in fifth place.
We're above Everton.
Okay. Is that good, bad, indifferent?
I think that we're in an interesting place right now. This next month is absolutely killer as far as fixtures, and hoping that Walker and Eriksen will be back to full swing and be able to play all the games in March. And Gilfie's back, so I'm pretty sure we're going to win every game. We're in a pretty good position despite everything that's gone on this season, and we're just going to hold our breath for the next 6 weeks.
You know who I think is the key for the next 6 weeks? That would be the Brazilian genius, Paulinho. Hopefully he can come good. Hopefully he can do something well. Hopefully he can make me freaking smile for once in life. Our next segment, we're going to do marry, kill, or do. And and our contestants for this week is going to be Paulinho, Dembele, and Sandro, which should be our midfield, but Tim Sherwood's our coach. So first up, who wants to go first? A1, marry, do, kill.
So I would be worried about breaking Sandro based on his recent injury experiences if I were to try and have sex with him, which I think is fair. But on the other hand, I would also be worried about him eventually tearing me limb from limb and bathing in my blood if I married him. Because, I mean, that's like till death do us part, isn't it? And I think Sandro would probably hasten that process. Which leaves me only with the choice of killing Sandro. Having said that, I'm familiar with the work of the Eagles. And in Hotel California, I believe they describe stabbing it with their steely knives, but they just can't kill the beast. Which is some pretty fucked up Rasputin type shit. So basically, I think what would happen is that I would spend the entire rest of my life trying desperately to kill Sandro, stabbing him with a fork. Until we're both old men and we slip quietly into the night together as friends. So that's what I would do.
So what about the other two?
No, I'm the whole time I'm just stabbing Sandro with a fork.
He doesn't have time for a partner.
I never meet Paulinho or Dembele.
Okay, fair. Brits.
This one is easy for me. Start off, I would marry Dembele. He is the best Belgian on our squad. He's the best Belgian on the national team. He has the best hair. He's the best looking. He's the best ever in the whole world for Belgians. And Sandro would be my fling. I'd have to do Sandro. Just because I want him to sing to me afterward. I think that's obvious. And I'm killing Paulinho. I like the guy, but he's cutting into my Norseman's playing time, and this is not going well for me.
Okay, so I'm basically going to marry Sandro because I like his YouTube clip of, you know, him singing so much that I want that in my life forever and ever. And also his facial hair is consistently getting better. So I'm going to marry Sandro. I don't want him to ever leave. I'm going to do Dembele because he's pretty. He's just a good-looking man. And Paulinho, I'm going to kill. Not because I don't love him. If I didn't have to kill him, I wouldn't. But I just don't want him to play this week against Chelsea, so I'm going to kill him.
That's fair.
Well, I guess I'm going to go with... I would probably marry Dembele as well, only because he seems like he would be the most faithful of the three. I would kill Sandro because you have to kill him before he kills you. And then... since all that's left to do is to do Paulinho, I do him because, well, I'm pretty sure we have fun with whatever Brazilian partner he brought with us. So that would be my marry, kill, and do.
Assuming, not really sure
where else I could go with that.
Very
but,
nice.
You know, in all seriousness, I want to see if we put both A1 and Cry on the task of killing Sandro, would he die in their lifetime?
No.
No.
Murder ain't no thing, baby. Murder ain't no thing.
Like to see you try.
I'm quite surprised that we managed to make it through that segment without a single reference to the picture of Paulinho with the fold in his shorts that looks like a massive wang.
She's the raging Paulinho?
The raging Paulinho.
Oh, inverted.
We almost made it. If there was... there it was.
We've only done two episodes, but we have not managed to not talk about one of the Spurs' penises. Yet.
Wow. All we do is... so easy.
Jesus. Well, let's move on to our next segment. Bricks, apparently we got some mail, or people had questions for us as a group.
People definitely had questions for us. We've seen the commentary, so I'm just going to not even make any excuses for him. The first question we're going to have is from our pal, El Carpet. And the question is, why should Putin be our director of football instead of Baldini?
And I think this is right up my alley. You know, there's a fellow Italian there. And I feel like I understand the Russian people, if anything else. So first things first. But, you know, let's look. Baldini is gorgeous and football savvy. You know, so he's going to be luring those prospective transfers in with that, you know, olive oil skin. And, yeah. I don't know what I'm doing here. We should be getting Putin because it's better to be feared than loved, and Putin is terrifying. This dude rode a horse around bareback. Not the horse. He was bareback. And that's how much, you know, swag this dude has, that he rides horses around without a shirt. You know, if you screw with the dude, he'll hunt you. Once again, shirtless. Also, Putin is the only guy in the world where, you know, if you take out one of those little, like, crappy agents and they're talking to him, it's like, oh, you know, is my Bloody Mary a little spicy, or did you put polonium 210 in it again, Vlad? You know, are you poisoning?
A1, please get us back, please.
So, you know, no, seriously, Putin for director of football, because, you know, he's a scary dude.
Just to clarify, when you said that that Putin was bareback and not the horse, does that imply that the horse is wearing a shirt? And if so, what kind of shirt?
You know, it's usually a Spurs shirt.
Yeah!
Good answer. Next question?
This comes from Dr. Martin Van Nostrand. And the question is, why don't we have a better name for our podcast?
Right. I guess I'll take that.
A1, yes.
Yeah, because it's kind of my name. So I guess the first thing I would say is this this question seems to kind of smack a bit of butthurt. And also, I guess the question that we've really got to ask when considering the validity of names is, what the hell kind of name is that? Your name sucks. So that's the first thing to put out there. And then the second thing is, it's a great name. It ties together Cartilage Free and the fact that we don't have any members of the masthead. I think it's pretty inspired. And I'm sure that everyone around the world would agree.
However, I have to interject. And hopefully nobody goes to FIFA or UEFA for this, but I like to tap up a little something. Even though we are masthead free, there is a standing offer to a wrestler in the masthead that he has an open invitation to come join us at any time to discuss Spurs if he so desires. And that's all I'll say about that.
I think I should preface that
next question.
That if said wrestler decides to join us, that I will be ejecting him from the podcast in about 3 minutes in. So that's just kind of a warning to him, should he decide to join us. But since he's not a real writer, we'll let it happen.
Oh, my God. This has to happen.
So next
the
question
ruse.
Is... The next question, you know, let's give this a minute here for the next question. I think I know this is going to be a quick answer. El Carpet again with a great question. What are the pros and cons of StubHub? And I would like to start off by saying there are no cons to StubHub, so this question doesn't really need to be asked. Is everybody in agreement?
I have no strong opinions about StubHub.
Okay. I'm an American, and I don't really like StubHub in situations where things sell out. In situations like Major League Baseball, where you have these huge stadiums that don't sell out day to day, it's very, very, very helpful to use StubHub. But when venues are sold out, it's terrible. It just shoots the price right through the roof, and it basically screws working class people, and I am not down with that. Thank you. Good night.
All right, Cry, this is ripe for your input.
Still StubHub?
Yeah, it's great, huh?
We should name our stadium StubHub. StubHub Lane. Sounds great.
Yeah, I think we have the naming rights all figured out. Two more quick questions here. One of them is from Ken. He wants to know, what are our favorite fruits to preserve?
Our favorite fruits or foods?
Fruits.
Fruits to preserve.
Yeah.
Can I go first?
Yeah.
Kiwis.
Okay, that's a really dumb answer. Vin?
I like hamburgers. You know?
I'm realizing this question from the peanut gallery is really a total burn on me, but I will preserve anything I can because I'm a dirty hippie. Okay. One more question. This one is going to be, I would like A1 to take the liberty on this. We have a question from Willie, and the question is, why you do this?
Why I do this? Well, I guess, what the hell? Okay, so I guess there's lots of different ways of considering this question. We could consider it from a kind of an environmental viewpoint, genetic viewpoint. Why am I the way that I am? I don't really know. And I think that, you know, years from now, people will look back and they'll wonder why I do this. And I guess that ultimately the answer is, 12.
Fuck. Anybody else want to interject there?
I do it for the kids.
55.
Cry loves the kids.
It's hard to follow that up, but in the words of Fred Durst, maybe the preeminent artist of our time, I do it for the nookie. For the nookie.
So you and Cry basically in agreement there.
Yeah.
Whoa, hold on.
I don't like how I got conflated with Cry. I do it for the kids.
Yeah. Oh, he said four. Not with.
Yes.
Sorry, okay, that's an important... That is a very important distinction.
Jeez.
Well, we're going to close our Q&A on the fact that Cry is a pervert.
Yeah. What? No, I do it for the kids. I do it for the kids.
Don't we all? You do it with children.
I am not
okay.
No.
These are things that are not okay.
No. So, well, moving right along. We're about halfway through, a little bit more than halfway through this episode. So we're going to go and move into the lane of two halves. Who are our contestants today? A1.
So I was just going to introduce. So this is the segment every week where two of our four podcasters research and debate the big issues of our time with 45 uninterrupted seconds each. It brings a sense of decorum and propriety to the cast, and hopefully it educates all of our uncultured listeners. Obviously, some of our listeners will be cultured and know all of this already, but you know, we need to tailor to everyone. So each week, one match is played, and we've got a kind of ongoing league table. Last week, I played Cry and came out on top, leaving myself on 3 points and everyone else on 0, with Bricks and Vin with their game in hand to be played pretty much now. The topic being debated in this match is whether or not the 4-4-2 has a place in the modern game. Certainly, it's been a real powerhouse historically in the English game, and it seems to be making a bit of a revival lately in the Premier League, not least with Spurs and our Ade-Soldado pairing. Is that a good thing? Well, let's find out. Now, I'm sure your first thought is to head for the textbooks, but fortunately for you, our competitors have done the hard work for you. Get ready to be edutained. This week, Briggs will be explaining why the 4-4-2 is a bad thing, but in the first half coming up next, it's going to be Vin pleading the case for the defence of this resurgent formation. So get ready, Vin, because your time starts in 3, 2, 1...
When tasked with exalting the virtue of the 4-4-2, I thought to myself, 55th, know your limitations, man. Know your weaknesses. I know zero about tactics, so I decided to email one of my best buds in the world, David Cameron, a bit of a tactic nut. And he wrote back, guys, he wrote back. It's a bit of a draft, admittedly, but here's what he said. Why the 4-4-2, you ask? Why indeed? Two words, English glory. Rio de Janeiro will cower and ultimately be leveled by the power strike duo of insert name here and the ghost of Wayne Rooney past. I mean, way past. I mean, pre-World Cup 2010 past. Make jokes now, lads and lasses, that St. George's flag will fly over the sordid, kind of disgusting world of international football once again. Unless it goes to penalties. Then we're fucked. Seriously, did you see how Pirlo did our lads last tournament?
And I time!
Wow. I mean, that was pretty exciting. That was an exhilarating first half. What did you think, Cry?
Well, I thought the lad came on strong at the end. However, I think he was a bit had a bit of naivete trying to invoke some nationalistic spirit, even though I'm not even English. I'm Welsh, for Christ's sake. What do I care about Wayne Rooney and David Cameron? And by the way, I think David Cameron should stick to directing movies and stop trying to lead the British Parliament.
That's a good point. Just for any, again, of our less cultured American listeners, that accent that you hear from Cry is a Welsh accent. That is from Wales. That's how Gareth Bale speaks when he opens his mouth. So I thought that in general that was well put together. There was some good linking. I liked the strong nationalist urges. And I felt a kind of stirring of hope and glory there. But I'd be interested to see whether Bricks is able to turn this around in the second half, trying to argue that the 4-4-2, which I'm pretty convinced at the moment is a great thing, is actually terrible. So get ready, Bricks. I think they're coming back out onto the pitch in 3, 2, 1.
So the 4-4-2, although popular with some managers of Tottenham Hotspur, is a really bad idea. And the reason is because Tottenham owns about 25 midfielders. We don't really have any great strikers. I mean, we have Adebayor, we have Soldado, and look how long we've had to wait for them to come good. We sold Defoe, and Harry Kane he's there, but really, if we're running a 3-5-2 or anything that has a plethora of midfielders, we're giving a lot of time for Gylfi Sigurdsson to be on the pitch. Eric Lamela is also the midfielder we deserve, and the fact that we didn't sign the Alvaro Negredo just tells us that we don't deserve to even run a 4-4-2. Bentaleb should be starting every single game, and we need
time.
Keep calming 4-4-2. Keep calming 4-4-2.
I think we've got to talk about Scott Parker.
We've got to the end of the match there, and it looked like there was quite a lot of build-up play there from Bricks, but nothing really in the final third. There was no kind of incision. It seemed almost like somebody had just cut the final third out of her argument because she was speaking too slowly. There was just nothing really there. What did you think, Cry?
Well, I really, really thought Bricks' argument had all the essentials to be a great argument. It was right there for the taking. She said Adebayor was a great striker, which we all know is true. I'm not sure about the Soldado reference, but, you know, to each their own. But you know what really, really almost won me over? But it's kind of ironic that she invoked the name, because just like Bricks' argument, Gylfi Sigurdsson made his shot hit the post and went wide, thus giving the win to Vin.
Yeah, I've got to agree that in the end, this was always going to be for Vin. I don't think that we can really argue with David Cameron, because if I do, potentially, I'll just never have existed. So I think it's very important to give this to Vin.
Isn't that the guy that's responsible for Avatar? I mean, you're siding with the guy that's responsible for Avatar?
James Cameron.
I don't know.
James Cameron.
No, I'm pretty sure it is David Cameron. He's very multi-talented. You don't get to be the Prime Minister of the U.S.
Wait, Isn't James Cameron the rapper from Harlem as well?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He also played for the Mariners, baseball player.
Oh, well, how can you go wrong with that? Even you have to admit, invoking the great name of James Cameron, it will get you the win.
So at the end of that match, we have a tie in first place because between now
the table,
myself,
the way the table sits.
Yeah, the table. So we have myself and Vince on 3 points and propping up the table like a mess of terrible ideas. It's Bricks and Cry on 0 points each. But we'll see how that develops over the rest of the season.
Absolute crap. Well, our next segment is supposed to be my rant, things that I hate. And I'm going to do a little something different, throw a little audible in here, a change of pace. If you guys could give me a subject that I could hate on, three things I could hate most about a certain subject, I'd greatly appreciate it.
Okay. How do you feel about cauliflowers?
Cauliflowers.
Yeah.
Cauliflowers are an abomination to vegetables. They just want to be broccoli. And broccoli's pretty horrible because George H.W. Bush said broccoli was horrible. And because one of the greatest presidents in American history said broccoli was horrible, I believe broccoli is horrible. And thus, cauliflower is horrible by the Pythagorean theorem.
I got another thing to hate on. I would like to know how you feel about people who pronounce it cauliflower.
How's it supposed to be pronounced?
It's cauliflower, not cauliflower.
That's what I said. Tomatoes, potatoes. What's the difference?
It's wrong.
You're wrong, and so is your face.
Oh,
very good.
I can actually see Briggs' face, and I'm not sure whether it's right or wrong. I don't know how to feel about this.
How do we feel about Luka Modric actually being embraced by Real Madrid fans now?
I'm really sad about that because the world is starting to realize what Spurs fans have known, that Luka Modric is not only got one of the prettiest faces in the world, but he's also one of the best players in the world. And there's a bright side to this, because now they can finally sell Cristiano Ronaldo back to Spurs.
Or to us in the first place.
Back to.
He's a Yiddo. A1.
Yeah, can I just ask you as well how you feel about people who have separately pronounced in this podcast Modric as either Modric or Modric. How would you feel about someone who did that instead of pronouncing Modric?
He's forever going to be the pigeon to us in my heart. He is the pigeon.
Yeah, you can't pronounce it.
Modric?
Oh. Yeah. Oh.
Modric. I don't know. I don't really miss him.
I'm sorry, I don't speak Greek, so how can I pronounce his name correctly?
You can't argue with logic, ladies and gentlemen.
No, especially. You can't argue with logic, especially when it's not there.
Well, moving right along, we have, somehow there's a international friendly this week, and this weekend we have Chelsea. So, before we get to Chelsea, how does everybody feel about the America versus Ukraine friendly in Cyprus?
Zero fucks given.
Negative fucks given.
I think we should still play it.
I still think we should bomb Russia, but that's me. But
well, Putin's okay. Now, so you'd be able to ask him, you know.
Yeah. Speaking of terrible things from Russia, Chelsea.
Oh,
Vin.
That was the link.
Well, here's my thing. I was worried about some of the things I saw against Cardiff on Sunday, but then the more and more I was thinking about it, I said, maybe this isn't a bad thing that we're playing through the wings a little bit more and that we're not seeing any kind of real creativity out of the midfielders, the central midfielders. And I thought back to an AC Milan tie at the San Siro from our Champions League campaign where we played two holding midfielders and we basically just absorbed a lot of pressure, defended well, and then tried to hit on the break with our wingers. And there's that famous goal where Lennon just shreds Milan and hits Crouch for the goal. And playing a Jose Mourinho team isn't that much different than playing, say, like an Italian team, okay? He's going to be tactically sound, and they're at home. They're going to be trying to, you know, take the game to us. They, you know, they're in the title race. I want to see Sandro and probably Dembele start this match. They're going to be super strong in the middle of the park, and I want to rely on our wingers. But I also want to rely on our fullbacks to overlap. Okay? So, Zeki Fires, you suck at maybe defending and going forward, so just go forward. You know what? We're going to have some midfielders cover for you when you're out, you know, when you're out of position. Listen, I think a draw here is a point gained, not 2 points dropped. So that's where I'm coming from in this whole thing.
No chance for Tadares to do with you. Bricks.
I agree, and just the thing that stood out to me about 55th's argument, most of which I wasn't listening to because it was probably incorrect, was that this would be a point gained and not 2 points dropped, mostly because you can't drop points you haven't earned yet. But I'll be very interested to see how Chelsea lines up against us, what their tactics are. It's going to be a really interesting match. I am going to watch it in the pub against my better wishes, or better judgment, actually, because Chelsea fans are absolutely the worst I've ever heard of, been around, seen, existed. Like, Putin's a Chelsea fan, I bet. Anyway, that's all.
Well, I think in terms of what we should set as our kind of realistic target for the Chelsea match, I think, you know, there are some matches where you can afford to drop points, but when you're playing a team that's in danger of relegation, you really have to just pick up those points, and this is one of those games where Chelsea really are in relegation form at the moment. I mean, I'm not 100% sure whereabouts they are in the league table at the moment. But presumably
top of the table.
It's top of the upside down table. You know, it's really important basically just, I just fucking hate Chelsea. So let's just beat them. Please. Once.
Seriously.
Yeah. But we've beaten them many times.
Oh yeah. Oh, do you remember that League Cup final?
Yes.
That was the most recent game against Chelsea. Oh, and then also that game that Bayern Munich played against Chelsea, and they won, and everything was okay. And everything was okay, and we bought Eden Hazard.
Why do you do this?
Fuck you, Bayern! Fuck you!
Why do you do this? Why you do this?
Already answered that question. Cry, you're out of seg.
Here's how I feel. Here's the thing that scares me the most. Is I actually kind of like have this like little brother, big brother kind of begrudge and respect for Chelsea, because I believe Chelsea is everything that Spurs should be. They play the way Spurs should play, they dominate games the way Spurs play, and they give no fucks about what anybody else thinks about them the way Spurs should. I think we're going to get manhandled for the first 20 minutes of the game, like we do every game under Tim Sherwood. But then Sherwood and his infinite knowledge is going to do something so out-of-the-box crazy, like play Lennon in the central midfield and play 3-5-2, that we're somehow going to come away with a nail-biting 3-3 draw. Vin.
Can I say that I do think Chelsea's going to come out of the box strong, and I think we tend to start very slow. That's why I want to start with Sandro, even though he's probably not going to be fit for the whole game. Give him 60 minutes, man. But he comes out with energy, and he can match that and pick our squad up. I really feel that, and then you can bring somebody else on. But I feel like Sandro has just got that energy from the get-go that's got to match that.
A1, you look like you have something dying and pressing to say.
Yeah, I just wanted to do my weekly recurring segment where I psychoanalyze Cry. So having heard the information that we've just got about Cry's opinion of Chelsea, I just wanted to throw out there for a second consecutive week that Cry is a terrible person and beyond help.
I really don't understand why you guys hate Chelsea so much, seeing how Abramovich almost bought Tottenham before he bought Chelsea. The only reason he didn't buy Tottenham is because there was no access from the subway line. But, you know, let's not look at history or anything or facts. Let's just hate money. Bricks.
I want to say I don't hate Chelsea. I actually like a lot of their players. I could watch Hazard play all day, and Fernando Torres is a god. But the problem with Chelsea is their fans, and considering, I think I may have mentioned this last week, that they think Roberto Martinez is David Moyes, they don't deserve anything nice. They deserve to support Liverpool, and Chelsea should get some nicer fans.
I really do think that Chelsea, I'd rather Chelsea in the league than Man City, but that's me.
No, Man City all the way.
Okay. Anyway, we're going to move on to the next segment. A1, I hear a bird says that you want to, you have something special for this week. Why didn't Wenger see the incident tonight?
Well, this week, he was actually looking directly at the incident. But immediately before it happened, someone told him. That Leonardo DiCaprio had missed out on an Oscar again. And the resultant swell of tears unfortunately obscured his view of the incident. So he did not see the incident this week.
Okay, thank you, A1. Also, in this week's edition of Spoilers Alert, George Clooney did die in Gravity.
Okay.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, that, ladies and gentlemen, concludes this week's installment of Massive Free Cap Podcast. Do you guys have anything else you want to say?
Yep. I'm just going to jump right in there. So just want to sort of build, really, on the work that we did last week as a group on spoilers. And fuck you, Cry! Fuck you! The fuck is your problem?
We're not very good people.
Sorry. Before we head out, I have to double back for a second.
That's usually not like you, Cry, to make a mistake with the running order of this podcast. It's been so fluent today.
No. Listen. Here's what I pause.
Do you
want
to adjust your microphone at all? Do you want to adjust
pause.
It?
Pause.
Maybe slam it down on the
pause.
Table.
I think there's a plane taking off in your kitchen.
Spoiler alert, this podcast is heavily edited.
Praise be to inverted fullback.
No, because I misread the, look, I misread it because I thought that we weren't doing good with the order today. We were just going to go from Wenger didn't see the incident to closing out the show.
Hey, there's no shame in not being able to read basic instructions. Continue.
Can I say for the record that all of my outlines from now on are going to look like a hairy redknapp team sheet? It's going to say.
It's just going to be fucking unintelligible shit. Cause
nobody, and also, nobody asked me where my name came from. Like, this, so I completely forgot that that's what we were supposed to do.
Hey,
like,
Cry, where did your name came from?
We can't speak English speak anymore.
Is that how they speak English in Portlandia?
Hey, don't let me in with those crazies.
Okay. Hey, I'll do it.
Okay, hold on.
Just as a note to Inverted Fallback, can we keep some of that? Because it actually might help explain the terrible audio quality. And also it was funny.
Yeah, so keep the part where I ask, don't add the part where Vince asks, and just have Cry answer the question.
No, fuck this.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But also, I mean, keep the bit where I rip the shit out of Cry, because...
Oh, obviously.
Yeah.
Well, the story about where my name came from, Tottenham Makes Me Cry, is when I first moved to Washington, D.C., D.C. I went to a Spurs watch party pub thing where I met actually Inverted Fullback, and while I was getting to know those guys, it was also during our glorious Champions League run season. Unfortunately, it was also the same time where we crashed out of the FA Cup at Wembley in the semifinals against Portsmouth, and I was sitting at the bar, actually on a stool, watching us go into extra time. And Kevin Prince Boateng hitting that penalty shot, and I just start losing it. Not like boohoo, cry, but just like tears, just like sitting there, chin in palms, looking at the screen, tears, like a small tear running down my side of my face, just like, I thought this was going to be year I was going to actually like watch a meaningful trophy to get raised up at White Hart Lane in Wembley, and I was just like, devastated. And when I joined the Cardinals Free Captain, I just went with that name because, well, that was the last time a sporting team actually made me cry in real life. So that's where my name came from.
So is that a foreign as in, I don't understand, because Tottenham aren't a foreign team there. They're from this country. Oh, do you mean because you're all foreign?
We don't have accents, you do.
Yeah.
No.
You're the one who has that crazy accent. I'm from Wales.
You're the one who has the crazy accent, he says.
Actually,
I'm from Wales, damn it.
The accent.
Right.
I'm from Left Swansea, son.
I'll show you what an actual accent would sound like. So, I don't know which one you'd prefer, but this would be if you're from Scotland. That's how you would sound. So this would be if you were going to do your analysis of particular football matches. You'd be like, well, the defence was shocking. It was shocking. That's Alan Hansen, basically.
He's got to do better.
He's got to do better there. He can't be making that sort of mistake in a top-flight football match.
I was always amazed that groundskeeper Willie knew so much about football every week. Man, and he goes to a lot of football matches, too.
Yeah.
Who are we talking about?
Don't worry, Cry. You wouldn't understand.
Who's groundskeeper Willie?
Don't worry. We were just engaging with your story, Cry. Don't worry. It was a great story, and we all listened.
Inverted Fullback should
be Inverted Fullback was actually there when I cried, so...
You know, I think we know who our next guest speaker is. I don't think we need that wrestling bro on.
The Ruse!
I was talking about Kevin. Well, that concludes our weekly podcast here at Masshead Free Podcast as we dive into the abyss. Thanks for listening, and maybe we'll see you again next week.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Maybe you'll hear us. No, why would we see them, Cry? What are you taking?
Cry, you're a horrible person.